As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Madcap, but somehow still oddly reliable goalkeepers, towering bald centre-backs, the Victor Moses conundrum, 11 Ever Banegas, a randomly selected mononymous character from Guess Who, Hankook coursing through the veins of Kevin Gamero, and of course, Unai Emery. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés and the pure Europa League 11. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 95 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me, first of all, is Jack Pitbrook. Very important question for you ahead of this podcast, Jack. What is your view of the UK meat industry's performance during the pandemic?
Well, I haven't listened to the bit of the podcast that you're talking about, but I have read the interview with Kevin Keegan, so I can't pretend that I'm not in on the joke. I'm afraid.
Fine, just wanted to get it out there, just to wring a little bit more humour out of that podcast. Anyway, alongside you for the Europa League 11, the pure Europa League 11, is James Moore. James, this isn't too niche, is it? Because I think this is a fascinating layer of the footballing bedrock.
No, the Europa League is as big a competition as the Champions League, right? It's just they're all concentrated into one day of the week. But that Thursday night is a joyous time for millions of people right across Europe.
Yeah. Administratively, it is the same size as the Champions League. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, it requires the same effort to run the competition. So I completely agree. So we're going to get into the kind of foundations of this first. We'll run through the team and we have plenty of excellent suggestions from our listeners. But I do want to indulge you both in a very, very brief adjudication panel because this has just been put in front of me from Paddy Sisyphus. James, he says he was watching EFL on Quest and pundit Joby McEnough described a goal by Connor Washington as Connor Washington-esque. Not sure that's allowed.
I have absolutely no concept of what a Connor Washington-esque goal would be, unfortunately. But no, I'm not sure.
He?
Surely it's just a trademark Connor Washington goal. That's surely the phrase he's looking for there, right?
Yeah. But
we're talking about the player.
Yeah. I can understand where the logic came from, Jack. It's just the idea of a player just about doing an impression of himself, which I quite like.
I respect the commitment to to doing punditry well that you would know the trademarks of players that, you know, far down the league. So yeah, I'm all behind, all for that one.
The only thing I can think of is if Connor Washington has reinvented himself to become a completely different player and then done something that was an echo of his kind of original iteration.
But not enough to roll back the years.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. Because he's probably not old enough, is he? So
probably not.
Okay, no, well, maybe we'll let Joby Mekhanov off. Right, let's talk about what we're going to do here. Jack, we're aiming for a precise subgenre of player, as always. And this is a very interesting one in the context of all the ones we've done before. I feel like it's a continental hybrid of the pure Barclays 11 in spirit, the too good for the Championship, not good enough for the Premier League 11 in principle, and also our transfer rumours 11 in terms of personnel. It's very similar type of player. So this is a very interesting 11, I think.
Yeah, so I think to be a classic Europa player, so one, you need to have played a lot in the Europa League and you need to have played well in it. But you can't be a great player. You know, we had some genuinely great players in our Champions League 11, people like Nedved or Raul. No place for these guys here. You know, if you were that good, you'd be playing the Champions League. The Europa League is slightly different. Also, we need players who kind of represent the essence of the Europa League, which to me is technical skill, slightly mad and silly, like prone to doing silly and stupid stuff, like bad tackles, ridiculous skills. I don't want to give the game away, but Ricardo Quaresma type player, perhaps. Who, you know, had a very storied career in the Europa League himself. So yeah, that's it. It's both presence in the Europa League, also like presence at different clubs. Like this isn't a place for one club guys. I think we need guys who've jumped around between various different teams, but always stayed within that kind of Europa League milieu. So that's what I'm aiming for.
And that's quite a difficult thing to do in a career. Well, if anything, it's a very good career. So yeah, fair play to them.
And a great life. Yeah. Being a Europa League player, it'd be fantastic.
Yeah. James, there's an inherent possibility here that we could end up, at least from my perspective, with 11 players I've spent the last decade reading about on Twitter in almost subliminal installments. Yeah. And yet could not pick out in a lineup if you put them in front of me.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's very much, there's going to be a lot of players here who are those kind of perennially linked with Premier League clubs.
Yes.
Faceless names that you see on the back pages or you know, on the saying Twitter rumours. I disagree slightly with Jack in that I'm going to mention a player who played centre back for one of the English sort of less glamorous English teams slightly actually before Europa League era, which maybe is another issue we need to talk about in a second. Yeah, I'm not sure it's necessarily all going to be kind of exciting players who had the kind of ability to go viral, which is, I guess, is kind of what you're alluding to.
No, I don't really want to get too bogged
down. I think there's got to be some players who are basically not good enough for the Champions League and would never play in the Champions League. But in this competition, maybe you have the opportunity to, quote unquote, go deep.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes, very good. Actually, I mean, I presume you were skirting close to mentioning the name Chris Riggott there, Jack.
That's right, yeah, that is correct.
Which takes us to an important technical point, because Jack, listener Tom Love writes in and says, strictly no English players allowed, which is a very interesting perspective, because in terms of British representation, at least, I don't think of the Europa as a particularly British thing. I think of this kind of as a kind of shop window for the rest of Europe.
Even though English teams have gone quite well in it, you know, we've had, what, 3 English winners in the last 10 years?
Yeah, very isolated incidents, though.
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, so I haven't got any English players in mind, although in the last few seconds I am starting to consider changing that.
You want Chris Riggott, mate.
You know what? It's a different Chris who I'm thinking of.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it there. We'll come back to this soon. Some elephants in the room, however, James. I know that everyone listening here is thinking Sevilla. And yes, thank you to Ryan Benson, who just sent the entire lineup of Sevilla players from at least one of the finals they won. Very clever. But we're going to be sparing with our Europa League monopolising Rojiblanco aces, I think, today. So, as I said to Jack earlier, I would settle for a spine if that's how it turns out. But I don't want a team full of Sevilla players. That's been done to death. When it comes to the manager, that may be inescapable. But we need to share this out, because the Europa League is otherwise quite a democratic thing. I mean, yes, it might be dominated by one club in terms of winning it, James, but it's a nice even spread, is basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, the thing I would say is that a lot of those Sevilla players have kind of popped up at other clubs playing in the competition over the course of the last decade. So actually, it's kind of unavoidable. You know, when we did... what was the team we did the other week with all the Wigan players in? Sevilla are basically like the sort of continental Wigan, right?
Oh,
that's kind of how it works.
Oh no, it's Middlesbrough upset all over again. We can investigate that. Final point to make. The Europa League, Jack, or the UEFA Cup, responsible for one of my favourite football chants in terms of its poise, in terms of its spirit, its sentiment, which is Thursday night's Channel 5. A genuinely great all-time football chant. I don't care if it's now obsolete, because the fact that it's obsolete and still rings true is really good. It's so good, of course, that it has a Wikipedia page for itself. And football chants on Wikipedia pages are great because they're so matter of fact. So, Jack, let me read you out the intro for Thursday night's Channel 5. It is an English football chant to the tune of Tom Hark. It is mainly sung to antagonise supporters of the other team for playing in or dropping into the UEFA Europa League, which until 2012 was carried domestically on Channel 5 with the Prime League slot on Thursday evenings. The chant developed and is used to insinuate that the team it is aimed at is playing in a less prestigious competition to the UEFA Champions League. Perfectly summed up.
I love it. What I love so much about that is, imagine trying to explain it to someone who has like never lived in the UK, for example. Like, I don't know. I imagine we probably have some American listeners to this podcast. If so, well, Channel 5 was a channel that launched in about 1998, and it was famous mainly for showing like very violent films and pornography. And bad game shows, and it's a long way from the sort of prestige of BBC or even ITV.
Mm. Yes, quite right. But interesting, the development of this chant, James, as Wikipedia quite rightly states, it is used to gently antagonise people for their current club status. But Channel 5, in a quite quaint, charming move, reclaimed it for themselves.
Yeah. Stan Collymore.
Historic piece of television. I've got a clip for you, actually.
Stand back. All right.
Next time, Jim.
Decorum again.
Football.
Stan, brief thoughts on the match ahead.
I mean, that's the moment that chant probably jumped the shark, isn't it? I feel like that. They had kind of reclaimed that in a way that possibly took the power away from it.
Yeah, well, I mean, swiftly after that, Jack, ITV got the rights. Or rather, to be more specific, ITV4. Is it odd that the chant didn't evolve?
ITV4 would just about fit. Yeah. It was two, one maybe slightly too many syllables. So maybe it would work.
I guess it requires a person to actually engineer the coordinate it, and it's just not going to happen, is it?
It feels like something the three of us all would have tweeted in about 2012, by the way.
Yes, definitely. I just love the use of the verb antagonise in this, because it gives me the image of like a bunch of, I don't know, Arsenal or Tottenham fans being forcibly held back by stewards in their fury at being reminded that they were playing on Channel 5 instead of on ITV.
Well, of course, Ashley Cole famously shouted it at Manchester City players after their exit from the Champions League in 2000-something or other. So it definitely became a weapon. Final point on this. Listener Sam James writes and says, technically not a player, but I just want to nominate Matt Smith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's spot on, actually, isn't it? Yeah. That really is.
Yeah, Europa League highlights. What a gentle piece of football television that was. Okay, let's get into it. This is the pure Europa League 11. We start, of course, James, with the goalkeeper. Who is the Europa League's Igor Akinfeev?
Well, having said we didn't want to go all in on Sevilla, I am going to name a Sevilla goalkeeper first up. But obviously, it's your shout. You can omit him if you wish. Mm. Andreas Palop, who was a Sevilla goalkeeper in 2006 and 2007, which obviously, as we know, is pre-Europa League. Jack's face now, looking at, is this not pure enough for you?
Not a UEFA Cup podcast, James. It's a Europa League podcast.
It's just a renaming, mate. I don't
think the transition period is an important point. It's very crucial.
You wouldn't claim a pre-1992 player as a Barclays Premier League player.
No, but I feel like the lines here are way more blurred.
Dixie Dean, Barclays like legend.
Did Andres Palop play in the Europa League?
Do you want me to check his Wikipedia now?
Of course he did. Surely he did.
I would have thought so.
Jack Pearce scored a goal.
He scored a goal in like a sort of last 16 game and then saved three penalties in the final.
Wonderful.
That's perfect. And he set Sevilla on their way to win the competition 10 times in the, however many times it is, 10 times in the next 12 years or whatever stupid number is.
Listener Jack Pierce writes in and says, Andres Palop, Sevilla's madcap but also reliable keeper during the transition from UEFA Cup to Europa League. He's up there.
Well, you could argue then, he made the Europa League what it was. We talk about how the Premier League was formed and all the stuff that happened, Michael Thomas scoring that goal at Anfield and whatever else being part of a decision to form the Premier League. How do you know that Andreas Palop's headed goal against, I think it was against Shakhtar actually, and then his three penalty saves in the final weren't a big part of the decision to rebrand it to the Europa League?
Very, very, very.
Where would Hankook be without Andreas Palop? Jack.
Okay, so we have a solid name to start with. Jack, I offer you a couple of quickfire names. Kevin Trapp, I don't even know who he is. And Helton.
Ex-Porto
goalkeeper Helton, who won the Europa League in 2011. And one of his Wikipedia photos is of him looking slightly uncomfortable during a blizzard before a Europa League game against Rapid Vienna in December 2010, which is pure Europa League image as a frozen snapshot of the experience.
Yeah, when I was doing my research, I think I would recognise Helton if I saw him. Didn't he wear pajama bottoms?
Tracksuit bottoms,
which is quite a classic Europa League look. When I was doing research earlier, the name Beto kept coming up.
Ah, that's good.
Formerly of Porto, very, very Europa League career, Porto, Braga, Sevilla, Sporting. I think played for two of the Sevilla finals. I think he would have been in goal when they beat Benfica on pens in 2015. So in some sense, he's got a great Europa track record. At the same time, if I saw him on the street, I would have no idea who he was. And if somebody had asked me yesterday who was in goal for Sevilla when they beat Benfica on pens in 2015, I would not have said Beto. I would have said, I don't know, somebody else.
Well, this is a sensational start. This is
so
really good.
He's got that kind of name. He's got that kind of, like, I don't want to say namelessness, anonymity, which is a part of being a Europa League guy, I think.
Well, I've thought about this. I've weighed up Andres Palop's era-spanning influence. I thought about Beto's facelessness, but it's Helton's tracksuit bottoms that wins it for me. So Helton is our goalkeeper. He's won the Europa League. There's something slightly erratic looking about him because of the trousers, but I'm convinced he's had at least one game where he's foiled and thwarted a big side. So Helton is our number one. Don't worry, I will let you have at least one player each into this 11. Let's go to right back now, Jack. Straight away, given that he missed out on our pure Champions League 11, so I feel like we almost owe it to him. And as Dara Morrissey says, very useful for set pieces, Dario Cerna.
Yeah, I was torn between Dario Cerna and Jesus Navas. Navas is kind of a converted right back, but did play there in the 2020 Europa League final, which Sevilla won, and also has the kind of UEFA Cup track record that James was pointing out. Cerna, I don't know, I'd just rather have a specialist right back. I think Shakhtar is somehow both the team I associate as a classic Champions League team and a classic Europa League team.
Yeah.
He was, Shakhtar, I don't know how Cerna's played in the Europa League, but he would have played hundreds of games.
They got to the final, didn't they, once? Was it 2009? Oh, they won,
yeah,
it,
the last one. Didn't they lose the last final to Werder Bremen, or did they beat Werder Bremen?
I think they won.
Was that the last ever UEFA Cup?
But by your pathetic metrics, it doesn't count because it was pre-Europa.
Indeed. But they did, so Shakhtar did get to the semis of the Europa in 2016. He's also, he's just like quite an interestingly distinctive player, played through his 30s, really good at set pieces, and yeah, great player, icon of the game. He's my right back.
I thought it was Cerna. I thought you'd very gradually changed your mind in the space of a 5-minute monologue. That's fine. Navas is a very good shout and an unexpected one for me. But James, let's hear what you've got.
Well, can I give you another sort of repurposed winger into a fullback? And this guy, I think this guy's first 50 matches for Chelsea were all in the Europa League, which is some stretch given they've only been in it twice. Victor Moses. Just feels incredibly Europa League.
Yeah,
I just don't think he played any Premier League games for Chelsea in that early part of his time there. But he played loads in that run to the final. Was it 2013?
Did.
I feel like he probably played almost every game. And he's popped up. I think he must have played for Liverpool in the Europa League when he was there. I'm sure
Stoke
he's played for other
Europa
clubs.
League? Fenerbahce in the Europa League?
Not sure about that one.
Surely not.
But surely. I mean, where else has he been? Like Fenerbahce? Was he at Fenerbahce?
I'll tell you what. If Victor Moses played for Stoke in the Europa League,
he definitely
did. My instinct says he didn't.
Utter shite. It was earlier than that, Stoke in Europa League, wasn't it? Oh, no, wait. 11-12.
14-15, don't think so, not sure. I still like it as a shout. Have you got any other names for us, James?
Do I need another name after Victor Moses?
The only thing I've got for you is Vedran Čorluka.
Ooh, yeah, that's really good.
Look, I'm conscious that at least one person has complained about me talking about Spurs too much on this podcast, so I'm going to be very careful.
Well, we've got to be careful of being too severe, that's all.
That is true. Victor Moses didn't play for Sevilla, so it's fine.
Are we happy with Victor Moses?
Yeah, let's go for Moses over Serna.
Victor Moses. Okay, I feel like this is the one that people are going to go, nah, not having it, but don't care. That's what happens with these lineups. We're up against the clock at the end of the day. Left back I found quite problematic, Jack. Not many options until Joseph Doherty came out of the gloom with Razvan Rat.
Correct.
Won it with Shakhtar in 2009.
West Ham
seemed
legend.
Like he was there forever. Getting knocked out by Sevilla and Marseille in the last eight.
That's good. That's probably better than the one kind of unimaginative one I had, which is Alberto Moreno, who I think really encapsulates like being good enough for Europa League, having won it with Sevilla and then this year with Villarreal, and then also being like quite clearly not good enough for like a properly good team.
That's shown by the fact he was rubbish for
Liverpool over the years. So
do you know what really annoyed me about Alberto Moreno? On the back of his shirt was written Alberto M. That's fine, you can have it however you like. But the dot was before the M. No one has ever explained it to me, and I don't know why.
Do you think the Premier League or Liverpool should have explained that to you personally?
I believe someone should have offered some sort of logical explanation of why it was the case. But certainly at Liverpool, the dot was before the M, and I don't know why. But yeah, no, I'm really happy with Razvan Vrat. Very enthusiastic reception to him.
He feels more on the Europa end of the Shakhtar spectrum than Serna to me. I think that works really nicely. You've got to have Shakhtar in there, and I think he's the perfect man.
Just going back very slightly, producer Dave, with three exclamation marks, says he cannot believe that Victor Moses has been chosen at right back. I am slightly concerned about Victor Moses, about the reception we might get. Does he have a breadth of Europa League legacy that we're looking for? Do we really want Jesus Navas instead?
How many times has Navas played at right back? I mean, I know, Moses is really a wing back rather than a right back, but I was struggling.
Maybe we'll make a late call on that, but I'm torn. Anyway, we've got our flying fullbacks, Victor Moses and Razvan Rat. Let's look at our centre halves. Jack, Ian Woodcock says, if Benfica's Luizão isn't the captain of this team, .. and then doesn't offer what the consequences will be. But I am already convinced. Listener Sam also says, Luizão from Benfica at centre-back. I saw him score two against Tim Sherwood Spurs at White Hart Lane, which just feels like a very Europa thing to do. And he missed out on your transfer rumours 11, so you owe him. Is Luizão the shoe-in that he says he is?
I also scored a pen, I think, in the 2015 final when Benfica lost to Sevilla. I don't have him in my team, but I think he's a really good suggestion. I've gone for a different member of that Benfica back four, the kind of permanently linked with Manchester United, Ezequiel Garay.
I don't think we had him in the room as 11. I'm not
lost
sure we
two
did.
Europa finals with Benfica. Also played for Zenit St. Petersburg and Valencia, who I think are very Europa-y teams.
Yeah.
Playing for Zenit really elevates it.
Garay has got to go in.
I do like
that. So I've got Garay, but I think Luizão is a great suggestion too.
Okay. James, hit me.
I had Luizão and Chris Rigger, as you know. I mean, Rigger, I can't look past him now. There's something so romantic about the idea of this guy who, all of others, Middlesbrough's other centre-backs then would have been, Southgate and Egyog, England internationals of the time or just before. Pretty big names by the standard of the day. But Chris Rigger, quite a humble sort of player. And I think that kind of sums up what can happen in the UEFA Cup / Europa League, right?
That's fair enough.
We saw with Middlesbrough and with Fulham both getting to the final, a smaller English club getting to a European final is a pretty amazing thing, and everyone can get on board with that. I just think the idea of Chris Rigger playing in a major European final against a really good team, that Sevilla team, as we know, were a very strong side. It's really good. He scored in the semi-final, one of the two comebacks they had, and I think we're going to come on to one of the other players from that team, I suspect, a bit later.
Yeah,
maybe if
definitely.
Jack's happy with the cut-off. it just feels right to have someone like that in there. I don't think you want the whole team to be full of players who played in the competition once and then didn't ever do anything in Europe again.
No,
I think it kind of, like, the European League offers the opportunity for other players to play in Europe.
No, this is fine. This is all very spirited. It's a very
nice
spirited
way
case
to get
you put forward.
Like that in there.
No, I'm charmed by the spirited case that you put forward. The only thing is, I feel like I want to keep my Chris Rigger powder dry for perhaps late 2022 when we finally get round to doing the slightly ill-advisedly predicted to be England's World Cup squad in 10 years' time, 11. And Riga is definitely a cornerstone of that. So he's not in, but I do like the case.
May I suggest William... another Chris?
Yes.
This is the time I'm going to play my other Chris card. What about Chris Smalling? Fulham's famous run, 2010. Manchester United's triumph in 2017. And then went to Roma and played a bit more Europa League under very different circumstances. He's the only Englishman that I've considered in the course of this. But he has a kind of... He's obviously... Like, the fact that he's a good player who's not good enough for the Champions League, really, to me, that makes him... James is putting a face, but...
I think you're kind of right.
I'd have Smalling with Garay at centre-back.
By most measures, he kind of fits, but I think the fact that he's like a kind of been a regular England international,
yeah,
it sort of makes him feel a bit too mainstream.
I don't want to waste my England card on Chris Smalling. Yeah.
I don't want to waste my used to play for Maidstone card either. But here we are.
Fine. Well, Luizão's not going anywhere because any self-respecting team at any level needs a big dome-headed centre-half who's a goal threat at set pieces. So Luizão's staying. Garay's spell at Zenit really does give him the edge. Final shout goes to William Giles, similar to your Riggott shout, James. He says, Daniel Carrizo was Reading's big January signing when they got promoted in 2013. Played for 87 minutes in total, loaned out to Sevilla, then wins Europa League three times in a row. not high enough in my consciousness or the mainstream consciousness for me, but I really did appreciate the trajectory. So perhaps on our bench. So our defence, which may be... maybe amended later, is Victor Moses at right back, Razvan Rat at left back, and a centre-half partnership of Luizão and Ezequiel Garay. Great start in front of our goalkeeper Helton, protecting him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, midfield, a huge task ahead of us. This is going to be the bulk of this podcast, I fear. James, Michael AFC just simply says, 11 Ever Banegas.
Ever Banega, of the five midfielders I've written down, his name is first. Yeah, he's incredibly Europa. I mean, I couldn't tell you...
He's the king of the Europa.
I couldn't tell you how many of those Sevilla teams he was in, but I suspect it was probably... That was three. Three, was it? Yeah. I mean, that's
Forever
definitely
Banega.
Got to put him in... He feels like one of those players who is just kind of... bubbling under below elite level, which is obviously incredibly Europa League. I just, you know, he's one of those players you see play every now and then, and he's not actually that great. He's obviously not rubbish, but like you kind of feel if he went to the Premier League, he'd be going to, you know, he'd be going to like West Ham or somewhere, or maybe Everton when they're not having a great time of it.
He had a kind of Europa League level kind of scandal, didn't he, Jack? With some sort of webcam situation, I believe.
Oh God, I've forgotten that.
Yeah, that's very Europa League behaviour, isn't it?
It is.
So if he needed cementing, there it is.
He had that kind of. So he was literally the first name on my team sheet for those three wins for Sevilla, but he has a kind of like throwback energy as well. Like he's obviously not as good as a Riquelme, but he has that kind of like old-fashioned Argentine midfielder who is incredibly skillful and very clever, but doesn't really run much and doesn't really, you know, has a kind of like Paul Scholes approach to tackling, which makes him a really great player to watch on TV and really fun to get behind. But he's obviously very, very far removed from what we expect from midfield, the kind of like Superman, super soldier, robot, Kevin De Bruyne type player.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy that's a shoe-in for me. So we've only got two slots left in our midfield, but so many Europa League subgenres to cover here, James. First of all, well, no, specifically, Ross Quinn says João Moutinho has to be in there. A top quality player, but half his appearances in European competition were in the second tier. I haven't checked this, obviously, but it sounds definitive. We can't have one or the other. We pretty much have to have him, don't we?
Yeah, I've definitely got Moutinho in my team. He was the second name in my midfield. I think he's just always been at that level, like he's a very good player. But the fact that he was one of the Monaco players who didn't get signed, he was the only man left in Monaco after they reached the semi-finals of the Champions League in 2017. Sporting Porto, Monaco Wolves is a great Europa CV. It's also quite an interesting story in itself about, you know, where the money for Jorge Mendes players goes nowadays. He was also in that Porto team that won it in 2011, which I think is probably the only time that he has won this competition. And while, you know, Falcao and James Rodriguez from that team went off to go and be big stars, Moutinho didn't quite. And he's also just got that kind of Europa technical skill and awareness and intelligence married with not an awful lot else.
And played by the Wolves as well as kind of an elder statesman, a kind of I can guide you through this jungle. kind of guy.
He does play in that kind of quite relaxed sort of way that does feel very sort of Europa League, isn't it? He's kind of like not quite the intensity or the pressure of like a big Champions League night, but, you know, to kind of spray a few passes around. I think he's that sort of level. And as you say, the fact that he's been like the guy who's been left behind effectively twice, really, that probably says it all, doesn't it?
Definitive. Yeah, I mean, that's very much the core of what we're talking about, isn't it, here? Not being considered good enough until it's too late. I want to deal with some more specific names here, James. Stefan Mbia.
QPR legend.
Oh, well, yes. Well, I don't know if that's a feather in his cap or not. Yevhen Konoplyanka.
Oh, yeah. He definitely has to make contention, doesn't he? And again, you know, having talked about the players that were constantly linked with the Premier League, he definitely ticks that box.
I'm going to provisionally put him, but we really do have other little furrows to plough.
Well, one of the players I was going to mention was Marek Hamšík, who maybe, like, I can see Jack kind of shaking his head a little bit like he thinks he's a Champions League player, but I think actually he played way more games in the Europa League than he did in the Champions League. I mean, obviously he was at Napoli for sort of a decade or so. And he just has that kind of slight, obviously in terms of his image and the way he plays, a little bit of eccentricity. And that kind of feels incredibly Europa League to me.
Okay. Yeah, I just a little too CL for me, I would say. And also relatively one club man.
But that is true.
In a European context, in a European competition context at least. Some more names to throw at you. Nathan Slingsby says, Atiba Hutchinson.
Incredibly
Europa.
Yeah.
You don't need to know who he plays for. He didn't even know to what country he represents.
He's Europa. Canada. Mm. He was like a big star at Besiktas when Bilic was manager, and I think I would have seen him in my favourite Europa League memory as a journalist, which was when Tottenham lost 1-0 at the Atatürk Stadium, which Besiktas were playing in while what's now called the Vodafone Arena was being built. And so Pochettino took a pretty shit team over there with like Kabul and all the players he didn't fancy anymore. And they lost 1-0. And because the Atatürk is kind of falling apart a bit, the floodlights kept going off. And so the Spurs players had to keep like going back into the dressing room while they found, you know, put some more coins in the meter to put the floodlights back on at the Atatürk. And I'm pretty sure it was like a classic Europa League experience, and I'm pretty sure Atiba Hutchinson was playing that day for Besiktas.
Quite like the idea of that. Other ones. Charlie Jones says the Europa League is the only competition that Iker Muniain has ever played in. Nice touch. We're well stocked for our kind of scheming Iberian.
Well, yeah, I was going to say Miguel Veloso was the other one I was going to mention as well.
Yes.
He feels incredibly Europa Cup / Europa League.
Yeah. In a similar vein, Reece Jones says Borja Valero. I feel like I've never seen Valero play in a Spain shirt, but he must live in Who Scored's Europa League Team of the Week forever. we're basically on the same theme here. Greaves Bell 14 says Johan Gufran. Is he the Newcastle one?
Gokuf is the good one. Gokuf was the guy who played for Lyon and Milan and Bordeaux. He's brilliant when Bordeaux won Ligue 1 in like 2008 or 9-ish. He was like a YouTube sensation.
He doesn't feel like a Europa League player. He feels like a sort of a short-lived Champions League player who then just completely went off radar, right?
We can save him for our Eurosport Eurogoals 11, I think, as well. James, I don't want either of these players in my team, but I do want the definitive take from you about who is more Europa. Eric Lamella or Nasser Chadli?
Eric Lamella, 100%.
Okay, quite agree.
He was the only Spurs player I was going to be willing to talk about. I mean, just for the rub, he's just an incredible Europa League. He's just a Europa League icon.
Okay. Final random shout from our listeners. Henry Worth says Mehmet Topal.
Yes.
I know less than zero about, and even, yet he still bleeds Europa League to me.
Even less than Atiba Hutchinson. I reckon he could have played against Manchester United in European competition like 50 times, yeah. Which I suppose actually maybe means he's a Champions League player more than a Europa League player.
Yeah, very possibly. Fenerbahce, stalwart. So we have two slots nailed down. Yevhen Knoplianka is clinging on by his fingernails for the third slot, but I offer you this situation. Eastern European based Brazilians with squad numbers between 80 and 99. We have to have one. Yes. We have to have one. Flash 1985 Jack says Tyson should represent the mandatory Brazilian that appears in Eastern European teams. That's a good start. Samuel Dustow says if it's not Alan from Braga, we riot. That's a step up. I'm more tempted by him. So how do you feel about Alan from Braga, first of all?
Isn't that now Alan at Everton?
No, it's different Alan.
No,
it's a different Alan.
Yeah.
I remember being a Europa League game at City where I think Alan was playing for RB Salzburg or something, and he was cheered onto the pitch, and it was like everyone thought it was hilarious to have a player called Alan. Yeah, I reckon Alan. I need to figure out I need to tell one Alan from the other. I'm getting a
little
confused.
I've gone off Konoplyanka completely.
No, Konoplyanka's in the front three, right?
Yeah, exactly. Konoplyanka would be more of a sort of attacking player.
The only way to really decide this, because I mean Alan seems definitive, James, but perhaps not quite, but Ross Tyson has taken us down the avenue perhaps we need to go down. He says, I'm sure this is breaking the rules, but can you just include a generic first name which covers everybody Brazilian journeyman who plays as an attacking midfielder and takes every set piece for an Eastern European team. How could we do that? How could we pick a name that kind of just fits? Well, I offer you, in front of me, I have the entire list of characters from board game Guess Who. All I want you to do is give me a number between 1 and 24, please.
13.
Herman.
Herman. That's perfect.
That is perfect. I mean, I feel we're going to have to explain it whenever I visualise this team, but I like Herman. What's Herman or Alan? Alan, isn't it? Let's keep Alan.
Yeah,
it's too much of a silly
real
gimmick.
Player.
It was good fun to do it, but we're not going to use it for the purposes of our team. So our midfield trio, Ever Banega, João Moutinho, and Alan, the Braga one.
Perfect, perfect.
And it is perfect. I'm really happy with that, and I'm really happy we didn't go with the banter option either. So sorry to Guess Who, but this is serious business. What a team so far. Let's recap. Helton in goal, a back four of Victor Moses, maybe. Razvan Rat, Luizão, Ezequiel Garay, a midfield trio of Ever Banega, João Moutinho, and...
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Alan. So up front, this is the fun bit, and perhaps the most clear-cut part of our team of all. First up, James, Kevin Gamero.
Yes.
Neil Bates writes in, says, part of that Sevilla team who won it 17 times in a row, then went on to win it with Atletico. I also remember him doing well against English teams and therefore becoming a perennial target for your West Hams, your Newcastles and your Evertons. And I have to say, it is astonishing that he didn't play for Everton.
All of that really does put him in the sweet spot, doesn't it? He must have played in the Champions League, but I just can't picture it.
Do you know what Kevin Gamero looks like?
Only because I looked at his Wikipedia page in...
I refused to do it just so I could keep that going. I don't want to ever know what Kevin Gamero looks like.
How many caps has he got? He's French, right? How many caps has he got? I mean, I just know nothing about him beyond the context of him occasionally turning up, like, you know, when I'm checking Europa League scores on a Thursday night. That's just where he exists in my mind.
13 France caps, I'm told.
I mean, that's not terrible. They're not short of decent strikers, France, are they? But, you know, clearly not good enough to earn a regular place or get any minutes at any tournament. So,
all right, done and dusted. Yeah, Kevin Gamero, sorted. Now, Jack, we have a dilemma, which you raised right at the very start, about whether a player can simply be too great to be in this team But one half of Rimmer writes in, says Radamel Falcao was banging them in Europa Leagues for Porto, Monaco, Atletico, but feels like he never did anything in the Champions League. I have not fact-checked this. Why would I? Neither have I. It does feel a little harsh.
That's true, though. That is true. Falcao doesn't really have much of a record in the Champions League. And he went, like, a bizarrely long period of time without playing in the Champions League. Like, even during time in which he was transferred for huge amounts of money from Porto to Atletico to Monaco, but didn't play in the Champions League for years and years. Then by the time he did, when he was at sort of Chelsea or Man United, he wasn't quite the same player. But my own personal opinion is that Falcao is just too good a player to be in this team and too famous a player, even though he does tick a lot of boxes. I think Gamero is our number nine.
Yeah, I think there are better options. Your Oscar Cardozo's. Oh. Carlos Bacca as well, I thought, was
Carlos
another one.
Bacca,
I mean, again, I know we don't...
Bacca and Gamero are the two classic Europa number nines, not Falcao.
I don't want to sound like, you know, some sort of football hipster proto Tifo football guy, but I was incredibly excited about Oscar Cardozo in that Benfica team. Do you not remember?
Really good on
that
football.
Yeah, he was in the team
embarrassed to say this, but he was really good on Football Manager.
Yeah, but that'd be exactly why, right? And he was in the team with, you know, Di Maria and I think Ramirez is in
that was
team.
A great team.
A really good
David
team,
Luiz,
but they didn't win it, did they?
David Luiz, Di Maria.
Yeah, Ramirez.
Cardozo, Ramirez, Pereira.
Gaitán. Oh, Gaitán should be in this, by the way.
Gaitán, yeah.
Oh, bored of Gaitán. He's appeared in every single one of the 11s we've done.
Okay, fine.
Didn't they get hammered by Liverpool in the quarters in 2010?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think.
Yeah.
After I...
They beat Everton, though. Did they beat Everton?
But they had basically a really good player in every position.
Yeah, good team.
Who went on to be really good players over the next 10 years.
Yeah, so Oscar Cardozo.
Instead of Carlos Bacca, I want you to choose one of them. You can't have both.
I feel like
Cardozo or
Bacca must have won it a couple of times, so I guess it probably should be him.
Okay, so our front line so far, Kevin Gamero, a shoe-in, Carlos Bacca, fiercely fought for over the heavyweight Radamel Falcao, who I feel sad to lose, I have to say, but I feel like I stamp my authority over these 11s too much, so I'm going to let it slide. So I want a kind of slightly wild card option, maybe not quite as cemented.
Okay, so I really want a Konoplyanka. I think Konoplyanka is classic because he was a star of both Dnipropetrovsk run to the 2015 final, and then the classic, if you can't beat him, join and move, went to Sevilla, and then was part of the Sevilla team that won it in 2016.
All right, then.
And also, what I like about Konoplyanka is how, like a lot of these guys, he was always linked with, say, West Ham and Newcastle. While Andrei Yarmolenko went to West Ham and basically gave the magic away. You know, he was stopped being an exotic player, Yarmolenko. And you see him on telly playing for West Ham, getting shouted out by West Ham fans every week. But Konoplyanka, because I think he went to Schalke and now at Shakhtar, he has retained that exotic magic that he first had when we saw him in Euro 2012. So
you are 100% correct.
Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely right.
However,
bang on. Well explained.
However, I put it to you that a player who became a global superstar, the most coveted player in Europe on the basis largely of a run in the Europa League, or actually UEFA Cup, I think it was, but it still counts by my metric. And also, you know, playing well in Euro 2008, fine. But Andre Arshavin, I mean, he completely catapulted himself into a different stratosphere in that run with Zenit in 2008. And like, everybody wanted to sign him. And I know, you know, Euro 2008 was part of that too. But he was just massive.
We're going to have so many people pointing out that this is pre-Europa, aren't we?
Oh, come on. Come on!
If he doesn't span the transition,
okay, I'll give you discounting that on the basis that he probably didn't play in the Europa. Oh, maybe he did, but fine.
There'll be a space for Arshavin in here somewhere. We need more names.
Ricardo Quaresma, like classic, played for tons of Europa League teams, played for Besiktas multiple times, Porto, Barcelona, Chelsea, all sorts. Also, he had like a mad Europa League style, like, you know, hitting those ridiculous outside of the boot shots.
The Trivilla, yes.
And I think he represents some of the kind of unseriousness of the Europa League. Mm. Another one who I think is maybe slightly out of our time span, but Simão, who was definitely part of that Benfica team we talked about.
I knew
earlier.
You were going to say that.
And I think Simão might have... Was he part of the Atletico team that won in like 2010, 2011, 2012?
Possibly.
Simão?
I mean, the other one we've not talked about yet, obviously, is Jose Antonio Reyes, who won it five times, which, you know, is pretty good going, isn't it?
The record holder.
That's a lot. I mean, we're going to be castigated for not including him.
I mean, he basically has to be in, really, doesn't he? I mean, five.
I know, but there's some fun options as well. I mean, there's Wagner Love. Why have you mentioned Wagner Love? See, look at your little faces.
I think most of his good work in Europe's secondary competition probably was UEFA Cup era, wasn't it?
Oh, fair enough.
If we're being nuts.
Okay,
Simão did win it with Atletico in 2010.
Oh, okay.
Before going to Besiktas.
We may be troubled by the UEFA Europa cutoff here as well with Massimo Macaroni, who we said we would visit eventually. Or that was a good shout from Connor O'Keefe straight away. You also haven't mentioned the joint third top scorer in Europa League history / UEFA Cup.
Luis Adriano.
Aritz Adjeriz.
Oh, wow. Well. Yeah.
I don't really feel massively passionate about him, I have to say.
No. I feel like he might be one for the younger generation. He's too current for us to get excited about, probably.
Okay, so if we are going to get tactical, and we don't want three pure strikers, we've got Gamero, we've got Bakker. Who is our wide man? We've got Konoplyanka. Jack has made a very, very spirited shout for Quaresma. But Jack mentions Ricardo Quaresma on every single pod appearance he makes. So
I prefer Konoplyanka to Quaresma in this context.
If you can't think of a better name, Konoplyanka.
Konoplyanka, I think, is definitely a perfect shout for this team.
Okay, so let's run through our team. I feel like we may have nailed this, or at least 90% of it. I'm really happy with this. So in goal, Helton of Porto, a back four of Victor Moses at right back. In defence, we have Victor Moses at right back.
Sorry, I know you were kicking off about that before, Adam. And I did have a name written down for a midfielder who I know has played at right back but not necessarily enjoyed it, but has played loads in the Europa League in the last few years. So Arsenal's last few years in Europa League, they've played a lot of like young academy players, which have been something they've done well. And Ainsley Maitland-Niles has started 39 games in the Premier League in the last four seasons for Arsenal and 22 in the Europa League, which is quite the ratio. He's an incredibly Europa League player and versatile too. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's a more suitable option for right back than Victor Moses.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he represents the kind of big club giving their fringe players a chance in unfamiliar positions just to get the game completed, Jack. How do you feel?
Well, that James bringing up Europa League level Arsenal right backs just made me think kind of overwhelmingly of Mathieu Debuchy. Lille, Newcastle, Arsenal, transfer to Man United. He's very Europa League.
He's also
one of the slowest players I've ever seen play in a football. I remember seeing him play for Arsenal against Cologne. I think it was Cologne away, maybe 2016 in the Europa League. And he was trying to play at right wing back. And he was so slow that he couldn't do it. And I think they had to move him to right centre back and put Callum Chambers at right wing back instead because Debuchy was just too slow.
Do you know what? I've weighed it all up and I'm actually happy with Victor.
And just cut all of that out and pretend it never happened.
Yeah. So no, our back four, after all of that, is Victor Moses, Razvan Rat, Luizão and Ezequiel Garay. That's a brilliant back four. I'm really happy with that. Great balance, great pedigree, experience, physical presence, attacking intent. Love it. Midfield three of Ever Banega, João Moutinho and Allan. All the boxes ticked, all of them. Schemers, winners, experience, people you get mixed up with other people, Brazilians with one name, Braga, done. Fantastic. Really happy with that. Didn't even have to get Eric Lamella in either. And a surprisingly controversial front line of Kevin Gamero, Carlos Bakker, and Yevhen Konoplyanka.
Those three
is going to get into one of these teams eventually, and here he is.
Those three could easily have just played together in one game, right? I'm sure, I'm certain of it.
They must have done.
And that I say is the rubber stamp for that front line. Very good call. Very good call indeed. Bit of a formality, really, but our manager is Unai Emery, right?
Yeah.
There really is no escape.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it?
But what about our venue for our dream final? Where are this lot going to be lifting the trophy in year 20-something or other?
Vodafone Arena, Besiktas play in Istanbul.
Interesting.
The Aviva Stadium is quite a good one for this sort of competition, I think, isn't it?
I think they have it, actually.
Oh, maybe they did. I feel like they might have. Yeah, no, did they have the Porto Braga one in 2012? I think they might have had.
Yeah, they did. That was at Lansdowne Road, yeah.
Quite like the Vodafone Arena shout, but I also offer Olympic Stadium Baku.
Yeah.
Baku's very Europa League as a city.
Yeah, it is.
Happy with that?
You clearly are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Fantastic. This wasn't too niche. I feel like this is probably one of the most tidiest explained teams we've ever had on the Football Clichés podcast. I'm so happy we've done it. I hope everyone's looking forward to another fascinating campaign, or half watching another fascinating campaign of Europa League action. We might do the Europa Conference League 11 next year. Let's see how that goes. Thanks to you, James, for joining us.
Thanks, Adam.
And thanks to you, Jack Pitbrook, for joining us too.
My pleasure.
Hope everyone approves of this team. And if not, I'm sure you'll let us know. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.